from KQED.
Hey everyone, I'm Emmanuel.
I'm Kali.
And I'm Jamidra.
And we're the hosts of
The Cooler.
This week, we need to talk about Michael Jackson. And you know why.
We also are going to be talking about Chloe, Jordan, and Tristan, and why narratives around shamed women aren't always what you think.
And Solange finally tells us what happens when she got home. Now the question is, how do we feel about it?
One of us likes it, one of us doesn't. We couldn't honestly do a show this week without talking about a tough but necessary conversation that's going on in the country right now. Leaving Neverland is a documentary on HBO about two men, Wade Robson and James Safechuck, who say they were molested by Michael Jackson when they were children. So it was 4 hours long. It was a lot to take in.
Oh, my God.
For me, it was just 4 straight hours of heartbreak. I'm left with terrible details I wish I didn't know, but I know that I should know.
Mm-hmm.
What was your experiences watching this documentary?
I think I went in feeling like, wow, we really are in this age of like water cooler documentaries. Like, when did that happen? Because everyone's talking about Fyre Festival, this Ted Bundy nonsense. And my God, this documentary could not have been more different to anything that folks are saying. Oh, you must watch this one. You must catch up on this documentary this weekend. It is rough. It is hard going. You will hear details, as Emmanuel says, that you wish you could purge from your brain.
Mm-hmm. You have to be mentally prepared. I couldn't have been more devastated on Sunday night and more devastated on Monday morning. I'm a Michael Jackson fan, but I'm not a Michael Jackson fanatic.
Right.
But because he's so prolific and he's such a part of my childhood, it felt like confirmation that a family member, you know, was a monster.
When you guys were growing up, because we're all around the same age in this room, were you always aware that there was this taint, this stench of weirdness, of bad behavior, if even just calling it that sounds ludicrous, around Michael Jackson? Because growing up, I don't remember a time that I didn't know about Wacko Jacko and whispers about his behavior with kids. This wasn't like some revelation that came in halfway through my life. I always knew the guy as an amazing musician, but a really weird person who probably does things that are very wrong.
I can't speak for everybody else, but I can speak for myself. I will say this. As a kid, I always knew that Michael was a little off. As my grandmother would say, he's touched.
That's a nice way of putting
it. Okay. He's a little touched. We all knew the story of like Joe Jackson and his family and how dysfunctional it all is. And so I think we rationalize to ourselves. And I remember being a kid and hearing my mom and my grandmother talk about it. Is that like, oh, that boy is just, he's touched. He's like a little delayed. He's an adult child. Mm. And yes, he's probably hanging out in the bed with children, but he's a child himself. Like, they're just hanging out. Like, they didn't think that there was anything malicious about it. They explained it away.
There was a detail in the documentary of, oh, there was nothing to be concerned about. There was just like video games. There was popcorn. He had a toy train going around his bed. He's just a big kid. And so like by becoming a kid, he got access to children.
Allegedly.
And like you said, it seemed like all of us in the 90s and even recently have been making excuses for him because of his upbringing. Like, oh, Joe Jackson was hard on him. We grew up with him, so we felt like we knew him. And in the documentary, there's a moment where they kind of explain why this felt okay.
That's the trippy part, is because it felt like we knew him. Like he had been in my living room every day, in my ears, via his music and his posters, like, I'd known him, I thought. And it, for some reason, it didn't feel strange to let, you know, me, a 7-year-old, and my sister, a 10-year-old, sleep in this man's bedroom.
And there is like a certain level of feeling like you know him. He's just so prolific that he was just always a part, for me anyway, he was just always a part of my childhood and my life. And so when you hear Wade and you hear James talk about what was going on, and then they're showing this archival footage of like Michael's films and Michael on stage, and me recalling those moments as a kid, like sitting in front of the television, practicing these dance moves, seeing him hang out with these kids on stage, wishing I was on stage with
him. That's exactly it.
And then there's a piece like, as a parent, like I would like to think that I wouldn't be like, sure, my kid can hang out with this celebrity. But G and I were talking about this, and he was like, what if Nia was like, I want to be a singer, and Beyonce was like, I want to mentor her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she can stay at my house for, like, a weekend. I'm not a stage mom. But, like, if I was, and I was, like, thinking that this was a pathway for Nia, and I was like, oh, yeah, Beyonce would be a great role model, then maybe I wouldn't be thinking about all of the possible things that could be happening behind closed doors. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and they talk about how this didn't feel like real life, especially when one of the kids is taken on tour with Michael Jackson. Like, that's the stuff of dreams. If a young kid wants to be a star, to get to go on tour with your favorite star, it's just wild and unreal. So that when things that seem slightly weird start happening, it's still not feeling like it's part of real life. So who's to say what's normal and what's not? There's this really striking moment where Wade Robson talks about sitting on a bed with Michael Jackson, watching the TV where Michael Jackson is on TV, and then turning to look at Michael Jackson next to him on the bed.
Yeah.
Like, as an adult, that would be a very tricky dissonance to deal with. As a kid, I wouldn't have known up from down.
And Wade also said something interesting, which was, Michael Jackson to me was a god. Growing up, watching him, impersonating him, learning to dance via his dance moves. And then when he started getting attention from Michael, he said he felt, quote, anointed.
That word stuck out. I literally have that word written down right here.
Yeah.
I like just got chills just thinking about it. I think it's important to highlight their stories through their own voices. So I want to play another clip of how both James and Wade felt when they started getting attention from this larger-than-life person.
He's the biggest entertainer, and he's a creative genius, and that creative genius thinks that you're special. What's not to like, right? He gives you focused attention. And I think at that age, you want to be important, and you want to be noticed and loved. So this is powerful. Attraction.
I never told anyone about any of the sexual stuff that went on. I felt special. I was this boy from the other side of the world, and Michael chose me. Yeah, there's no question I was like head over heels in love with Michael. And he said he loved me.
Like, you know, when I hear that, the hard part for me is like they were children. And I think about how many of us adults put up with things that we shouldn't put up with from other people. Adults, right? Yep. For the attention and the affection of other people. And then these are small children.
People our age have trouble setting boundaries for people and standing up for ourselves and telling the truth about our experiences. When people say, why didn't these two men come out sooner? Why did they defend him in the earlier trial? It seems simple to me that the answer is these are children that because of this grooming process and because of this manipulation that went on.
And grooming is the word that we now use, that we know, but we didn't seem to use it back then.
Exactly. You know, when you're a kid, you don't have the language to talk about sexual things, let alone sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them said at some point in the documentary, I didn't realize it was abuse. He told us that we were in love and that this was the way we show love.
Mm-hmm.
And he would do nice things for me. And then seeing people like Princess Diana and all these celebrities come up and embrace him in public, it's like, oh, they're vouching for him. Maybe what he says about my parents is true. Maybe my parents are in the wrong. And something that sticks with me is in the grooming process, a part of it is don't trust anyone. It's us versus the rest of the world. But specifically, don't trust women.
Don't trust women. Don't trust your mother.
They will be the ones most likely to get you out of this. And so that really hit it home for me, how calculated each step of this is. And we can think of him as, oh, he was just a 9-year-old in an adult's body and he just liked to play. There was machinations going on.
Yeah, this was adept expert grooming. I mean, there's a seduction attempt here, not only of the kids, but of the parents who are drawn into his orbit. They are lavished with gifts. It's like grooming 101. It's nuts to watch. Like, and it just made me think, we are so tolerant of talent. You know, if someone's good at what they do, we will hurt our necks with how far we will look away from the aspects of their character and their personality that we can't reconcile and we can't wrestle with. I mean, that's what happened, right? In the 90s, when all these accusations came out, when kids and their parents started saying that these bad things had happened, we liked Michael Jackson's music too much. We didn't want to reckon with that. It was too complicated. That's what humans do. If, like, there's two things that don't make sense when assessed together, we're just like, who knows? And that's what we said.
Yeah.
It's easier to remain living in the fantasy of growing up for years, adoring and idolizing this person, and then to realize that maybe they aren't who you thought they were, and that you're kind of a part of this looking away, as you mentioned. It's too messy to reevaluate all that and to rip up the foundation of your entire perception of, like, popular music and your favorite artist or whatever. You know, if we're being honest with ourselves, the gut instinct, at least in my small body in the 90s, was something's not right. And all these rumors that we talk about in the classroom, like, I feel like it's true, but no one seems to want to believe it. So, you know, I'm just going to keep bopping along. And that's what we all did. And this is the first time I feel like in recent times where it's like, look at the facts. Here are these people's voices. And if you still can turn it off in your mind, you at least have to investigate.
And I do feel like there's this conscious attempt by the filmmakers to say, you guys all looked away in the 90s. You all looked away then. What about 4 hours? How does 4 hours of gratuitous detail sound again and again? Will that convince you? Is this what you need? Because it feels like being bludgeoned watching this documentary. I cannot stress enough, like, do not enter into watching this if you're in a fragile state of mind.
Well, I will say that when the film premiered at Sundance, halfway through the film, they had mental health experts there to help people throughout, because it's a lot of graphic detail. You're talking about sexual experiences with children. I mean, it's just, it's hard to listen to, and it's hard to scrub from your mind after. I mean, it's disturbing.
And I keep coming back to this all the time with various things that have been coming up in the culture around allegations. Why would this person lie? What does Wade have to profit off of? He's not going to become a millionaire from saying Michael Jackson molested me. Neither will James benefit from this in any way. And just thinking of a recent example, Dr. Blasey Ford has had to move several times, can't return to her job. And people were saying, oh, she just is in it for the fame. Why would you want to be famous for that and have at least half of the country think you're a liar and enterprising and evil? Like, this is not something people do lightly.
It'll be interesting to see how people process this, because, I mean, we've gone through the Bill Cosby, you know, we've gone through the R. Kelly at this point, which is, you know, and people are still in denial and there's video evidence. So it's going to be interesting to see how we grapple in popular culture and just in general with, like, the legacy of Michael Jackson and how we move forward, because he's such a prolific figure. You know, you've got artists who have built entire careers on him. You've got music that's being sampled. You know, you've got, like, Drake brought back Michael from the dead to be on his last album. This used to be, like, a huge accomplishment to collaborate with Michael Jackson or to sample Michael Jackson's music or anything. And now I don't even know where we go from here.
The thing I was left with after watching this documentary was there's these two men and their families, and then now their new families as well, who say that they know what happened. But it's not confined to them. There are these other people in Michael Jackson's orbit absolutely knew what was alleged to have been going on. And they are sitting at home right now, probably quite comfortably. And they knew, and they didn't do anything. And I just wonder, what is it like to live the rest of your days with that particular thing on your conscience? Not one of them said anything. I think some of his house staff have alleged things as well, but they were shouted down. It was the 90s. No one wanted to believe that Michael Jackson was capable of this.
I wonder if more people will come forward after seeing this who are related, either house staff or siblings of his or whoever knows something. Because just hearing the effect of the trauma on their current lives is hard to shake. Here's a clip of James Safechuck on the enduring quality of the experience that he had with Michael Jackson.
I had a lot of self-hatred, and I didn't know why. And you're not putting it on him, you're putting it on yourself. You think it's you're doing. That's part of the manipulation. They say time heals all wounds, but that I don't think time heals this one. It just gets worse. Secrets will eat you up. It sucks life out of you. Just deteriorates you from the inside. Like a part of you is dead. People, they might look at me and see a grown-up, but you need to see a... We're mentally little kids. We've just gotten older.
It's like that sounds and looks like no fame or no profit that I have ever heard of.
Yeah. I think long after this documentary, what it ultimately has done is opened a conversation that we as a culture are shy about confronting. It's larger than just a single person. It's larger than just Michael Jackson. It's kind of like an alarm to wake us up to the reality of how child molesters operate, mm-hmm. how they groom children, what the abuse manifests in children, like how that looks at the time and then as they grow up and how it affects them. This whole thing just feels for me like an education. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that this be just the start of the education. We need to keep having these conversations and not just when a celebrity is involved. Because this is happening in churches, mm-hmm. you know, in homes with close family members, in schools. And so the more we understand the problem, hopefully we can figure out a solution moving forward. That's the hope. We don't know how this is going to affect people and their perceptions of Michael or their perceptions of child abuse. But I would like to give the last word to Wade and what he hopes this documentary accomplishes in the end.
If my story of abuse with Michael and all of the ways that it affected me, if speaking that truth, other survivors of child sexual abuse at the hands of anybody could be helped in any way, shape, or form by me coming forward and speaking it, I wanted to be able to do that. I want to be able to speak the truth as loud as I had to speak the lie for so long.
Going from that to this may seem a little, I don't want to say the word dumb, but it's a different plane, right? Mm-hmm. You guys, you love your pop culture gossip. You know what I say when we talk about Khloe Kardashian, Jordan Woods, and Tristan Thompson.
Oh, yes. The triangle.
For the listeners at home who haven't heard about what this is, so basically, Khloe Kardashian's partner and, or ex-partner, I should say now, and father of her child, Tristan Thompson, is alleged to have had a liaison with a young woman called Jordan Woods, who is also Kylie Jenner's best friend. Mm-hmm. So this all falls out in the tabloids, right? That they've been seen kissing. Maybe they've even had sex. There's some kind of lap dance going on. And the Kardashian world blows up to kind of paint Jordan Woods, again, a young woman, as the architect of the downfall of the relationship between Khloe Kardashian and Tristan Thompson. Mm-hmm. So it's a problem. She is the Scarlet Woman, right? So she is shunned. So Jordan Woods comes on Red Table Talk with Jada Pinkett Smith, and she says that all the stories about her having an affair with this guy, Tristan Thompson, and the sex, they're totally untrue. She says that she went to a party, hung out very late, and as she was leaving, Tristan Thompson kissed her...
On the lips.
And she said that to protect Khloe Kardashian, she didn't talk about that. And she says this narrative about her wrecking a home is not true. So again, there's nothing much unusual about a denial like this, right? This isn't just any interview, and it's not just any interviewer. Jada Pinkett Smith has actually known Jordan Woods since childhood. Mm-hmm. And Jada prefaces the interview by saying that she's basically like an adopted member of their family. Jordan Woods' father actually was a sound engineer on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, which is how the two families became intertwined. And Will Smith actually prefaces the interview. He does this little thing on an iPad where he comes in and he delivers this pep talk to Jordan Woods before Jada, his wife, embarks on the interview. And this is what he says.
What I want to say to you is that the world attacks. It just happens. You'll never get around the world attacking. But I want you to know that you are supported and I got you and we got you.
Yeah. And that means the world to me.
And then what happens after this? Khloe Kardashian, the Kardashian empire, backs down and stops painting this young woman, Jordan Woods, as this like femme fatale that ended a precious relationship. Because as we know, Tristan Thompson gets about.
Not the most faithful.
But before she backed down, in all caps, she tweeted after the red table, Khloe said, "You are the reason why my family broke up." It was the next day when that wasn't reading well with Twitter.
Yeah, she backed.
Actually, Kris Jenner has written this following tweet. And I am very sorry for saying that. It's actually Tristan's fault. I should have said that initially. But you guys are used to me letting him get away with everything. So, yeah, I was just being crazy.
So everyone sees it for what it is, right? And you may be thinking, Carly, why does this Kardashian shit matter? Yeah. Especially after the heavy discussion about leaving Neverland that we have just had. But as I say, this is about power. It's about how power is used and abused.
Indeed.
And this is actually a really big deal when this usual expected narrative around this shameful, conniving woman is changed like overnight. Mm-hmm. Once Red Table Talk happened, this all changed. And the Smith family, this powerful black family who stepped up to ensure this young black woman wasn't thrown to the lions by the Kardashian family, this kind of reframed this and it jolted everyone into thinking that like, oh, like painting this young woman, like offering her up as this like sacrificial lamb as this villain, it's not going to work this time.
Mm-hmm. Especially because they, according to some people's opinion,
allegedly
have created an entire career borrowing aesthetics and just everything from black culture. Yes? Do you agree, Jamika?
That's gonna be a yes.
Okay.
Okay? But I do agree. I feel like it's the power dynamics. I think that if Jordan Woods would have went on Dr. Phil,
yep,
we would not be having the same conversation.
100%.
The fact that the Smith family, Will Smith and Jada Pinkett stepped in, the Kardashians were like, okay, so not this one.
They tried. But they failed. And it was so notable to me, like, how warm, like, the Smith family were about basically being like, oh, no, no.
What you won't do. That's basically what it was. It was the Hallmark greeting version of what you ain't gonna do on today is.
But it was a real show of strength. It was like, oh, no, we actually, like, the Smith family, like, they're kind of a big deal. Like, for real reasons. And to use your power for good rather than evil, not saying the Kardashians use it for evil, but I totally am. It's like this major thing that never really happens. These public shaming narratives, they happen so often and they are served up to us before we even realize that it's happening. And they're served up, I realize, by powerful families. Mm. Not just actual relations like the Kardashians, but governments, lawyers, newspapers, historians, powerful families, all of these groups. That's what unites them. And usually they are male. And there's always profile or prestige or money at stake. And they rely on nobody questioning these narratives with everyone getting swept up in this idea of like, yeah, this woman is like a scarlet woman. She is a bitch. She's the conniver. And just think of all the times that this has happened before.
And again, back to your narrative about how women sort of the role that women are assigned whenever allegations of adultery or an affair have happened. How is Jordan Woods more responsible for Khloe's and Tristan's relationship than Tristan is?
She didn't make any promises to Khloe. Tristan did. He had a kid with her as well.
Yes.
And same thing with Monica Lewinsky.
Yep.
She was an intern. She was young.
22.
Not saying it was okay for her to do that, but he was the president. He was married. He should have thought better of taking advantage of a very young girl. Mm-hmm. And yet all of the shame and humiliation was heaped onto Monica. And it still is to this day. And she's still trying to figure out a way to be known for something other than that. And it'll never happen. She knows it because she knows our culture. Our culture is well practiced in shaming and punishing women.
Mm-hmm.
And
because it's what we know, right?
Yeah.
We're like, oh, this looks right.
It's like, well, we're good at this, so we're going to continue doing it. It's like, how about we try something new? Let's shame and humiliate some men. Mm-hmm. Let's start with Tristan.
We don't know how to do that,
though. I got it. Monica, call Jada girl.
Yes.
Hit the red table. There's already hit the red table.
The dream. Mm-hmm. The absolute dream.
Hit the
dream.
Red table, Monica.
Will Smith will Skype in. It'll be a lovely time.
From the set of Bad Boys 3.
Obviously.
Loved that small detail. But the more I went down this rabbit hole, I started thinking like the name Anita Hill came to mind as well.
Yes.
Like we need a full person here. We need, you know, the Scarlet Woman. This woman will do. I know it seems really dumb, but Megan Fox, she was telling us that Michael Bay was a creep before everyone else realized it. And everyone just said, the way you dress, bro, you look kind of slutty.
Here's a weird example. Pam Anderson and Tommy Lee's sex tape.
Oh, okay. Why did you put that into my...
Sorry.
Why did you add that into my memory bank?
You liked it back in the day.
Oh, God.
So this comes out. He is lauded as a hero. Whoa, you did that. And she is branded as a whore.
Yeah, she's the slut.
There was this idea that she deserved it for being sexual.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're in a place where when someone's sex tape leaks or private photos leak, we feel compassion for the people involved.
What, but this isn't cool?
It was just like, hey, you a hoe? Then you deserve it.
Well, if you took your clothes off and had sex with your husband, what did you expect? That's the kind of idea, right? In music, Yoko Ono, Courtney Love. Again, I keep going down this rabbit hole of these women that we've been told are a real nightmare, right? They're difficult, they're conniving, they broke up the Beatles, they broke up Nirvana, or maybe killed Kurt Cobain.
Oh, boy. Mm.
Like, the difference is between all of these names in my head, like the tragedy is, and I think it is a tragedy, that these kind of reevaluations of difficult women, of, you know, scarlet women, they usually take years. Like only now in the last couple of years have we seen Monica Lewinsky and that story for what it actually was and not what we thought it was at the time. And they were these convenient fall guys who didn't have a powerful, benevolent, adopted family like the Smiths with this super popular Facebook show to rescue them.
That sentence is wild. It's like they didn't have a wildly popular Facebook TV show. Like,
2019. What I will take issue with, though, that Jordan Woods says she knows I shouldn't have been there. And by being there, she means at Tristan Thompson's place. She was there with a bunch of people having a party, doing, in my mind, nothing wrong. The guy kissed her on the lips as she left. You got nothing to apologize for, girl. Go on. I know for many people, this whole Jordan, Tristan, Khloe, Kardashian thing is just a messy, juicy, silly chapter in the Kardashian circus, which none of us have paid for tickets to. Tristan Thompson is not Bill Clinton. His messy party pad is not the Supreme Court.
It is not
the Super Bowl stage. I know this. This is a silly story about a kiss. But the thing is that these types of acts, the removal of power from people who can't necessarily defend themselves, they always start really small, like with a kiss. And if we tolerate this shit, who knows what else we'll be tolerating?
Gotta be wiser.
It's the big and the pig.
Hey, the big and the pig. Hey.
It is time for the peak and the pit. This week, my pit goes to somebody that I actually really love.
Oh, no.
And it is to Solange Knowles for taking 2 years, 2.5 years, to give us more new music.
Plot twist.
Plot twist.
Plot twist. I don't like it.
Oh, no. You will not. You will not. Here's the thing. Regardless if you like it or not, Solange is back. And that gives me life.
I'm glad.
For the people who don't know, Solange just dropped a new album. We had Seat at the Table, which was glorious. This is not Seat at the Table. It is a little different. It's called When I Get Home, and it's ambient. It's not meant for you to listen and sing along. It's meant for you to put on in the background while you clean the house.
Whoa, that's your review?
Yes.
Listen to it while you clean the house?
It's one long interlude.
Jimmy Jordan, no, I cannot.
Well, that's how I listened this weekend, so...
This is apparently what it sounds like according to Twitter. It's a clip from an Andy Samberg movie, and it hit the nail on the head for me. Y'all can make your own minds up.
Okay, so that may be one of the tracks. However,
that could have been one of the songs and you would have believed it.
She is back and I am here for Solange. I will always stand no matter what. So, yeah.
I stand as well, but there's one song on there where she says, things I imagine, things I am at, things I am. I'm like, girl, find the note.
She's an artiste. So that's my pit of the week, Solange. Come out with more music. Despite what Emmanuel has said and despite the jokes online, bring us more.
Solange, I love you, but... this is not it. Sorry.
But she's bringing you down.
And the peak this week goes to our favorite tuxedo dress, red carpet, ballroom dancing.
Yes.
Devo, Billy Porter.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if you are a fan of the FX show, you know who he is. If you're not a fan of the FX show, you may not know who he is, but he is that glorious black man who was on the red carpet at the Oscars wearing the tuxedo dress.
Mm-hmm.
The tuxedo gown, excuse me, darling.
It was beautiful.
By Christian Siriano of Project Runway fame.
Yes. Christian has outdone himself. He always dresses the people who the other fashion houses think they're too good to dress.
Mm-hmm.
But he comes through and he always works it. And this was like cherry on top. Magnifique. So, love some Billy Porter. So that's why when I came across a little video featuring Billy, posted by Cocoa Butter, an account called Cocoa Butter. So what's not to love? And Billy was sharing his 7 rules to live by. So life advice. And so I thought we should end this episode with a little bit of advice from Billy Porter.
I love that idea.
I need it.
Yes. Number 1.
Choose yourself. Save yourself. Bet on yourself.
Always choose yourself.
I like
Everybody
that.
Else is cute. That's fine, but you are number 1. You matter the most. So choose yourself. If you don't take it from me, take it from Billy. Number 2, and this should be no surprise, dress for the job you want,
yes.
Not for the job you have, honey. Clearly, right?
So if you're wondering why I'm always turning it with the clothing and the looks, darlings, that is why I have goals.
Number 3, he was talking to artists, but I feel like this is applicable to everyone.
Don't wait for anybody to give you permission to practice your art. You need to be practicing it always, every day, every moment you get. People usually ain't listening, but sometimes they do. You got to be ready when it's time.
And that goes with anything. Basically, don't ask for permission. Just do what you need to do. And then later, what did they say? Ask for forgiveness?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Rather than permission.
Yes. Number 4, this one is a hard one for me.
Uh-oh.
Be on time.
Oh, ooh. Me too.
Now, according to Billy, 15 minutes before is on time.
We're going to have some problems.
On time is late.
Oh, no.
Oh, Lord.
And late is unacceptable.
Oh. So you and I have some work to do.
I would like to say, as the person that was 5 minutes early to the studio today to record this episode, I concur.
Number 5 is one that we all know, and it is, when people show you who they are,
oh, yes.
Believe them.
Believe them the first time. Y'all know what I'm talking about. We got a lot of people we could be talking about.
Don't make them show you repeatedly. When they show you who they are the first time.
The first time.
Exit stage left.
Number 6, be of service. When your intention is service, everything else will work itself out.
Do something nice. Have you done anything nice for somebody today?
I hope so. I can't think of anything right now.
Basically,
I did do something
what
nice.
What did you do?
Someone was like, hey, I got you this cute little felt arts and crafts thing.
Wait, it sounds like someone did something nice for you.
I was nice in receiving it. And I said we should do it together. Actually, I sound like an So the answer is no, I have not done anything nice today.
If that gets cut out, I quit the show. I just want to put it on record, so hopefully it'll stay in.
What about you, Carly? Have you done anything nice for anyone today?
Oh, yeah. Actually, no, I'm trying to be more of a bitch.
Nice.
It's working out really well.
Well, I'm sure that's a service in some way.
Yeah.
And number 7.
Mean what you say and say what you mean and deliver. Be impeccable with your word.
Okay.
Keep it real.
Say it right. .mp3. Nelly Furtado is a queen. We should know that.
Exactly. So the next time you feel a little down, you need a little bit of life advice, just go find this video because Billy Porter is everything. Clearly, he's shown us through his art.
Mm-hmm.
He's shown us through his wardrobe. And he's shown us on Pose. What else is there to say? So now it's time for the song of the week. But this week, I come with abundant gifts because, like I said, it has been a rough week for us. So I do not have a song of the week. I have songs of the week. So you guys, I've talked about my little people. I have children.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter is into ballet. Recently, mm-hmm. I was at her ballet class. And while they were practicing and they were doing their little, you know, pirouettes and all the French stuff that they do on the hardwood.
Ooh la la.
Ooh la la. I was like, I recognize this song. Sounds a little trappish.
Uh-oh.
However, classical.
Oh my God.
I'm intrigued.
What are you about to play?
And so my husband, as he does, still has the Shazam app on his phone.
Whoa, mm-hmm. Whoa, Shazam is very popular and used by very cool people.
In 2007?
I used it just this morning. And it was a Jefferson Airplane song.
Oh, wow. You really are behind the times.
Good night.
So I was like, I started humming along. I was like, I know this song. However, it sounds classical. So he pulled out the Shazam and it was Lady Gaga.
Which one?
It was Bad Romance.
Oh, rah-rah.
Uh-huh. So what I did learn is that there's literally a collection of albums, three of them, called Pop Hits for Ballet Class.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so you can find, as I said, Bad Romance.
Uh-huh.
Taylor, I Knew You Were Trouble.
All right.
You can find What's My Name by Riri.
Love it.
You can find Halo by Beyonce. Please Don't Stop the Music Again by Riri.
Wow.
Umbrella, more Riri. I mean, Riri is popular with the ballet set, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, and Hotline Bling. Also, there's Dangerous Woman on there for you.
Oh.
A little Ariana.
Ariana.
I'm going to get my latex bunny ears and go to a ballet class.
They will not give you entrance.
They're going to be like, sir, you are literally in your 30s. Go away.
You are scaring the children.
Back out now. So I thought we'd ride out on a little bit of Please Don't Stop the Music by Rihanna.
Throwback.
Classical ballet. Take it away.
This episode was edited by me, Emmanuel Hapsis, with help from Ashley Ann Craigbaum. Thanks to Susie Ratcho, David Marcus, and Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs.
Until our next episode drops, you can find us on social media. I'm at Teacup in the Bay.
I'm at Excuse My Beauty.
And I'm at Jamidra Sense.
Bye!